SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We welcome you to hour number three, our third and final live right here on this Wednesday on the early line on Sports Grid. So much to detail for you in this third and final hour. Up next, we'll have some PGA Tour plays out in San Diego at Torrey Pines once again for the Genesis Invitational. Keith Stewart will join us live from Southern California. We'll talk the Four Nations face-off with Pete Jensen and get a check around this break in the NHL of everything we have seen this year on the ice. And then Donnie and I will go through a full Wednesday night in hoops action around the association. I believe all big 30 action. Clubs playing on this Wednesday big night, a very full slate, 15 NBA games and some college basketball games, of course, to break down as well. But before all of that, Donnie, we continue our conversations about the NFL head coaching vacancies that have now all been filled in the seven outlooks for those seven teams that had to hire a new head man this offseason.
Yeah, it's a shame that football season is over, but we have a nice offseason to get ready. I wish next Thursday night the Philadelphia Eagles were opening up at home as Super Bowl champions going up against what I think probably will be the Detroit Lions. How about that, BSS? Next September, first game at the Link, Eagles and the Lions for NFC supremacy right off the bat, but we do have a long way to go before we get there. A lot of topics, and teams are going to make those transformations, and it's fun talking about it as we've been doing this morning, lining these teams up on expectations before they even have the combine, before they have the draft, before they have free agency. Love that type of stuff.
Every month of the NFL offseason calendar has a marquee window, something that becomes kind of front and center and dominates the news cycle. We'll have the combine at the end of February. We'll have free agency open in the middle of March. Franchise tag periods, all of that involved as well. The NFL draft in Green Bay in late April. Then we'll get the schedule release and all of that. And pretty much before you know it, it's July and it's training camp once again. We'll talk about the New Orleans Saints. We'll hear from the people in just a moment. But Donnie did want to round out our discussion around the Dallas Cowboys and their outlook this offseason. Both you and I think realistic expectation, the Cowboys to be a winning football team, maybe double-digit wins this upcoming year and be a playoff team. Despite the lack of success of getting to the NFC Championship or playing for a Super Bowl once again. Of course, in the last 30 years, since 1995, the Cowboys have not even reached the NFC Championship game despite 13 total playoff appearances. There's a good chance for Dallas to do that this upcoming season. Big picture question number two on the Cowboys. Brian Schottenheimer is the new head coach. Is Schottenheimer already on the hot seat if Dallas does not meet that expectation and does not become a playoff team in 2025?
No, you have a long leash in Dallas, and Jerry Jones makes that official because you should have a short leash where the Dallas Cowboys were used to winning and appearing in Super Bowls, then going three decades without doing anything, as it feels like, and those coaches get a long leash, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. I mean, how long was Jason Garrett in Dallas doing absolutely nothing in the biggest moments? So Brian Schottenheimer, the way they talked about him at the press conference, you would have thought this was like Vince Lombardi coming to town, like, hey, man, it's the guy we always wanted. We call him Coach Shoddy now. Do you see the family he comes from and the expectations we have for the Dallas Cowboys? Like, no, they lose next year and go 7 wins and being competitive. Schottenheimer is not going anywhere at that point. Correct. Long leash in Dallas. That's what you get.
Mike McCarthy lied about being an analytical and forward-facing guy in the NFL. Won 6 games in his first year in Dallas and then was there for 4 more. There's an idea that loyalty is what Jerry Jones values. I don't think I would call it loyalty. I think I would call it being a yes man. And Jerry Jones has a long leash because he believes he is the smartest mind in a room with the biggest aura and ego walking in to any. But because of that reality, Jerry Jones is not, I'll fire you, I'll fire you, I'll fire you, year in, year out. Brian Schottenheimer is not on any hot seat. And frankly, Donnie, again, this has nothing to do with Schottenheimer, who is now getting his first head coaching gig after 2.5 decades as an assistant, basically, in the NFL. I think he's going to have some success. The Cowboys are too talented not to. But do I think Brian Schottenheimer makes the Cowboys now an NFC championship or Super Bowl contender? Absolutely not. Now let's go to New Orleans and let's hear from the people about the Saints hiring Kellen Moore as their next head coach. Was it the right call, not for New Orleans, but for Moore? That's what we asked you in Fade the Public. It's always an interesting thing about success, right? When you get to the highest level of the sport, when you're at the pinnacle as a Super Bowl champion, do you look to leave and hope for more? And if you do have that success, doesn't it lead to other teams around the NFL wanting even a sliver of that success now in their organization? Kellen Moore, in his only year in Philadelphia, leads the Eagles offense to a Super Bowl championship and now heads to New Orleans trying to figure things out in a rather precarious position in the Big Easy. At Sports Grid on Twitter, DRS, did Kellen Moore make a mistake leaving the Eagles for the Saints head coaching job? Yes or no? It is nearly a 50-50 split from the public. 50.2, as I see the latest numbers saying, yes, he did make a mistake. 49.8% saying no. Which way did Donnie right side vote?
I voted no, and not just because it's the Eagles, it's the Saints, or whatever situation. You can let me respond to this again. You can never make a mistake accepting a head coaching job in any professional ranks. I don't care who you are, what situation it was, waiting until next year. Nobody is promised tomorrow. And understand this, he's 36 years old. He's probably made a boatload of money already. Probably already has an NFL pension because he played more than 3 years in the league, then coaching for how long as he has. Now he's 36 and takes a head coaching job where, let's just assume, a five-year contract at $30-plus million. He gets fired after 1 year. You know where the $30-plus million goes? Right to his bank account and can then start earning another paycheck as an offensive coordinator in the NFL. That's where we'll start this. Now, from a team perspective, could you have said, you know what, if I roll the dice like Ben Johnson, I really want that Chicago job. I think it'll open up. That's one thing. And also, how much of a downfall would it be to come back to the Super Bowl champions as the offensive coordinator with that talented team and maybe able to be able to parlay it? But maybe he is sold like, you know what? It's rare I'm going to be a first-time head coach at 36, and the Saints are going to give me everything I asked for here with a long contract and a chance to build in a great city. Once again, the original point, did he make a mistake leaving the Eagles? You don't make a mistake leaving any team accepting a head coaching job, specifically in the NFL.
Completely agree. There are 32 NFL head coaches.
Yep.
That's it. 32 at the highest level of this sport, at the highest level potentially of any sport, as a head coach, at least here in North America, certainly the United States. When you get that opportunity, even if the situation you are walking into does not seem to be overly optimistic or hopeful, you take that opportunity, especially if you're 36 years old. Because if you flounder and you're an offensive mind, there is always going back to be an OC, and about 4 or 5 years down the road, you might get another look as a head coach. You are never going to be kicked out of the coaching ranks in some form or fashion or position around the National Football League, even if it's a difficult situation in New Orleans. And it is. 5-12 last year, DRS, 120-1 this upcoming year to win Super Bowl 60. The ninth overall first round pick, 8 total picks, cap space purgatory once again for New Orleans, minus $54 million. In the red, negative $54 million, the worst cap space position around the NFL. So it wasn't a mistake for Kellen Moore, but Donnie, did he walk into the worst situation in the NFL?
He did. He really did at this point. And the reason being is you're on minus $54 million. A couple signatures on a paycheck can clean that up, but you would only do that if this team was looking to win a Super Bowl and extend it here. You might as well just eat that cap space this year, build that foundation up, find your quarterback in the next 1 to 2 years, and live on from that moment. This is not a Band-Aid situation in New Orleans. So Kellen Moore is going to need some help, but I think there's a long enough leash in New Orleans, he'll be able to succeed.
Completely agree. PGA Tour plays up next with Keith Stewart.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
bright and early and live from San Diego. We get you set for another stop on the PGA Tour at the Genesis Invitational with Keith Stewart. Live right here on this Wednesday on the Early Line. Keith, the fact that you are in San Diego is a part of the story this year for the Genesis, as is the tournament host, who is just hosting and not playing. There's a lot outside of the odds boards in some PGA Tour plays that we need to dive into. But first and foremost, we appreciate the time, Keith. Thank you for joining us bright and early on this Wednesday.
You know what, Ben? It's great to be with you guys. DRS, everybody. Hey, great job at the Super Bowl, Donnie. I loved all the coverage last week. There's three quick things you just hit on that we got to talk about. Number one, Tiger Woods' withdrawal on Monday. Still grieving over the loss of his mother from about 7 to 10 days ago when she passed away. Of course, the weather is going to be a huge story this week down here in San Diego. And the fact that we've moved down here to San Diego because of the horrific wildfires up there in L.A. We can't be at Riviera Country Club this week is all part of the subplots that are surrounding this signature event.
So Keith, let's dive right in first to the location. Because of those devastating wildfires in Los Angeles, the PGA Tour made the decision a few weeks ago to move the Genesis Invitational from its normal home in LA at Riviera Country Club down a little bit in Southern California back to San Diego and a familiar spot at Torrey Pines, where the guys have already played early in this PGA Tour season. Keith, a change in locale, but a familiar one. How does that familiarity factor into this week of the Genesis Invitational?
Well, you know what? This decision makes tons of sense, especially for the PGA Tour. The Village was already set up. You know, the traveling circus that is the tour was already set up for them 3 weeks ago at the Farmers. And that event itself, you know, the South Course, we've hosted two U.S. Opens here. This is worthy of a signature event. They just couldn't take this event anywhere. It's a $20 million purse. So the guys come back here. It is a place that they like. It was the place that for years Tiger Woods used to start his season. The Farmers is absolutely an elite event. And then now to come back down here makes all the sense in the world. And guess what, guys? I spoke to a number of tournament officials, and they're going to keep the golf course, the setup, the same way that they do for the Farmers, because the South Course is that good. It's the longest course on the PGA Tour, par 72, over 7,700 yards. And you know, I talked to one guy, he said that they cut the rough at 3.5 inches on Monday, and they're not going to touch it again. Now, maybe that number doesn't mean much to the audience, but that is long. And with all the rain that we're getting right now currently and into tomorrow and into Friday morning, it will be wet, thick. It'll be nasty. This is completely a U.S. Open setup. And if you go to Vegas, the over-under on this week, guys, it's -8.5. I mean, that's going to be some tough sledding for these guys.
Yeah.
Keith, we take a look at the field itself, which we'll get to in just a moment, but the players not playing in the field, particularly Tiger Woods, a lot of excitement was coming around to hear. Obviously, his mother passes away. People grieve differently. Maybe he thought he could play it first, then decided it was best for him to sit this one out and sort of just watch. Talk about Tiger Woods this week and the anticipation of him actually coming back to the PGA Tour.
Well, you know what, Donnie? We've seen Tiger a couple times now at TGL, and he looks good. Now, I get it. It's a simulator golf, so he doesn't have to walk the entire golf course. But also, you have to think about the weather this week. It is cold. It is nasty out here, and it's only going to get worse as the tournament begins. And we know with Tiger's health since the car crash in 2021 that he kind of needs perfect conditions to get his back in shape, to get his body in shape in order to play the best golf. And I'm telling you guys, not enough is being said about what the setup of this golf course is like. It looks really, really hard for these guys. Now, the players, they notice it, right? Some of us in the media, we notice it. I was out yesterday. You know, you see the social media videos where the guys throw the ball in the rough and it disappears. I mean, it looks legit hard. And then when the wind starts blowing off the Pacific at 20 plus miles an hour, I mean, it's going to remind you of the weekend at Pebble that we had just 2 weeks ago. And or maybe the second round that we had at Farmers, where the scoring average was 3.5 over par on both the North and the South course during the Farmers. I mean, this place, when the wind gets going and the weather and the nasty rough, man, it is tough.
Keith, that finishing low score just 3 weeks ago at the Farmers Insurance Open was 8 under par for the four rounds in that tournament. Harris English, the champion, difficult just about a month ago, going to be very difficult this week. The field at the Farmers at Torrey, not necessarily as elite and robust as the field we see this week for the Genesis Invitational. And at the top, of course, it is Scottie Scheffler, but not as far of a distinction in front of Rory McIlroy. Those two golfers, plus 650, 4-1, and then you got to go all the way to 16-1 for Colin Morikawa to have that third best price. Keith, an elite field this week at Torrey Pines should be a great setup, demanding the best golf. Who excels this week in San Diego?
Well, you know, I love to give you Keith's keys. And when I go through those very quickly, with all the wind and wet weather, you're going to need around the green acumen. You're going to need a short game this week because you're going to miss your targets. And they're small here. The greens only average 5,000 square feet. The second thing is that who was good at Pebble? Who was good in the wind and the weather at Pebble? Those guys are definitely people I'm targeting for my betting card. And the third thing is strokes gained off the tee. This place is long and you're going to need to hit the fairway. So that leads me into the favorites. Scotty, the last couple of weeks, the driver hasn't looked as sharp. Hey, trust me. I mean, his average driver is well above average, but it just hasn't looked as sharp, and his short game hasn't looked as sharp. Maybe he wasn't as prepared for Pebble as we thought, but he just wanted to get back into competition. A couple weeks from now at Bay Hill, hey, it's Scotty by a million. I get it. But right now, I think Rory has an advantage with his U.S. Open setup. He's had six straight top tens in U.S. Opens. That's significant. And one of those top tens was here in 2021 when he was T7. I mean, that's legit. You know, I think Rory has a little advantage over Scotty at the top of the board this week. But, you know, at the end of the day, Scotty is Scotty, and he'll get back to doing his things at any time. I'm just not sure this is the week, you know.
Very short numbers at the top for both Scotty Scheffler and Rory McIlroy from Keith's Keys to the early leans on the early line.
Yeah.
Keith, who are a few other golfers to keep an eye on this week?
You know I love my early leans on the early line. Let's go with the kid, Ludvig Åberg, at plus 2,500. Yeah, you guys who heard me, that's the price this week, and that's because it's an elite event. We have 62 of the top 72 golfers in the official world golf ranking. So guys like Åberg get pushed down out of the 20s, and we're going to take advantage, right? He was leading the Farmers before he got sick 3 weeks ago after 36 holes. Last year when he played the whole event, he was T9. This kid, his game is picture perfect for this Pacific setting. It is absolutely for him to go out there and win. He could do it with the driver. He could do it with the putter. The other guy, the Irish Bear, Shane Lowry, plus 4,500. You got to love the price there too. He was second at Pebble. And when the weather got bad at Royal Troon last summer, he was sixth. Love myself, Shane Lowry.
Keith Stewart, we appreciate the time as always. More on the early line up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the early line on SportsGrid. We are now joined by Pete Jensen of the NHL to talk about a very fun new event with nation pride on the line. The four nations face off. Everything you need to know to get set for this battle between four countries, of course, on the ice. And then we'll check in with where things stand at this moment around the National Hockey League as well. Pete, for everything we have you here for these next two segments, we appreciate the time greatly.
Oh, of course, guys. Yeah, this is something that fans, hockey fans, and the players especially have been longing for quite some time. It's been almost a decade since there was best on best international competition where all the best players are in action. And that was the World Cup of Hockey in 2016. So you're going to have Sweden, Finland, the Scandinavian countries, and then the U.S. and Canada. Canada, of course, the juggernaut. But this whole tournament's going to be up for grabs. And you know, Finland's defense is a little banged up, but they're still going to be out for their nation's pride. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
So we see the outright odds at this moment. Canada, an ever so slight favorite ahead of the U.S., plus 145 for the Canadians, plus 155 for the Americans. Sweden, that third best number at plus 420. And Finland rounds out the group in the four nations face-off at 10-1. Pete, before we dive into some best bets and perhaps some winning wagers, let's talk about the format for the four nations face-off. How is this event going to look? What's the structure about to be?
Sure. So each team is going to play each other once in the round robin, and the first two games for each team are going to be up in Montreal. So that means Canada's first game tonight against Sweden is technically a home game at the Bell Center. So that should be beautiful for sure, whether they win or lose. And then the last day of the round robin is going to be a dandy this coming Monday with like kind of like a day night doubleheader thing on the holiday in the U.S. And then the top two teams, based on the point structure, 3-2-1, regulation win being most valuable, then shootout overtime win, 2 points, and then the 1 point for the shootout or overtime loss, no points for a regulation loss. Top two teams are advancing to the championship game, which is next Thursday, and that'll be in TD Garden up in Boston. And so the last day of the round robin and the championship game are going to be in the home of the Boston Bruins at TD Garden. So it should be a lot of fun. And I think that on that board that you just showed, people are overlooking Sweden. Sweden has a nice goaltending duo. Linus Ullmark and Filip Gustavsson's been one of the steals of the season for the Minnesota Wild. They also have the best defense to me on paper with guys like Victor Hedman, Stanley Cup champion, Erik Karlsson, who's been a 100-point defenseman before, and then also Rasmus Dahlin, who has some untapped potential from the Buffalo Sabres. And that's a cool thing too, right? Like some of these guys like Rasmus Dahlin, Brady Tkachuk, they've never played in the Stanley Cup playoffs before. So you may see those two guys kind of like unleash a fury a little bit in these meaningful games.
I think it's fantastic because when you put national pride on the line, like we watch all-star games, it's a lot of fun. It's high scoring. Nobody's really playing all that hard at that point. But now you take a look at that Canada. You don't think they're going to beat the United States if that ends up in the final, or Sweden and Finland. It's fantastic stuff. Talk to us, Pete, about, because different markets here, of course, you could pick a team to win, but MVP odds here, McDavid, McKinnon. I mean, it lists as this Hall of Famer after future Hall of Famer on this list. Any outlets for you that you're looking at in these type of markets?
Well, that number on Cale Makar is interesting because Cale Makar has won almost every trophy in the book, right? Calder Trophy, Conn Smythe Trophy, Norris Trophy. He's never won the Hart just yet, but maybe he could do that someday as a defenseman. So don't overlook what he could do in the grand scheme of things there. Yeah, there are some markets, like I saw even bigger number on Connor McDavid to lead the tournament in points. It's only 3 or 4 game tournaments. So Connor McDavid has led the Stanley Cup playoffs in points 2 of the past 3 postseasons, and one of those was the Oilers only got to the conference final. Remember that? So he's got that kind of overarching ability to lead any group of players in points, even if he plays like 5 or 10 fewer games. So he might only be playing one fewer game, or if Canada goes to the final, he'll play as many as anybody else. So yeah, I feel like there are some cool ones like that where you could just step back, maybe invest or have an angle on one of the best players in the world, and then just sit back and watch this best on best tournament and watch these guys fly around.
Plenty of plus money prices, and one guy will be trying to hope that everybody stops flying around. Maybe the NHL's best goaltender for the Jets in the native of Commerce Township, Michigan, Connor Hellebuyck, who has that 16-1 price, leading the United States in net. We'll talk about the opening night of the Four Nations face-off and what we can expect tomorrow as well. Next, Pete Jensen on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The opening night of the Four Nations face-off. Tonight up in the Great White North in Montreal. And it's the home nation team, Canada, taking on Sweden. Tomorrow night, we'll talk about the United States and Finland in just a moment, also in Montreal. But, Pete, we start with that matchup tonight. Of course, it is going to be a raucous atmosphere for the home nation taking on Sweden. Despite the fact the Swedes are listed as the technical home team, you can see a hefty price in favor of the Canadians. Total stands at 5.5. Pete, what are your expectations for this opening game in the Four Nations face-off between Canada and Sweden?
I think Sweden's going to put up a fight here. I think that a lot of people have talked about it. Maybe some of the casual fans out there are not aware. Canada's goaltending, it's not the Patrick Waugh days, the Carey Price days. It's Aiden Hill. The starter's Jordan Binnington. Both of those guys have won the Stanley Cup before in their careers, so give them credit there. But those are not anywhere near elite netminders, generally speaking, across the league. I think all three of the U.S.'s goaltenders, whether it's Hellebuyck, Jake Oettinger, Jeremy Swayman, I think they're all better than the trio in Canada. And maybe even Sweden's duo of Ullmark and Gustavsson might be better than all three of them as well. So Canada's goaltending is out for some respect here. And I feel like in any given game, they could be vulnerable. I'm not saying it's going to come against Sweden, but Sweden does have some nice center depth. They have some really good goal scorers on the wing. Maybe people don't realize like how good William Nylander and Philip Forsberg have been from a goal scoring standpoint. And even deeper down the list, like you could find a prop out there for Rickard Rakell, who's having a career year for the Penguins, for Sweden to score one plus goals in the tournament or two plus goals and get something even bigger. So I would look at those type of angles. Adrian Kempe, who plays for the Kings, also is a trigger man that plays on the power play for the Kings. He's going to be playing a top flight role as well for Team Sweden and giving them dark horse potential here.
Pete, we always take a look at the rosters too, because obviously Canada lives and dies with hockey. Team USA is certainly very formidable. Were there any roster expectations where people were upset that somebody was excluded from a roster that probably should have been on the roster to begin with?
I mean, Canada's so deep. So like Mark Scheifele from the Jets was left off, but they're just so deep and Canada's looking for a shutdown line and stuff like that. I feel like on the US team, there were a couple of snubs for sure. Clayton Keller is one. Tage Thompson, 6'8", whatever centerman, was left off. Cole Caulfield for the Montreal Canadiens. These were just debates that were going on. Obviously, Chris Kreider was put on the roster. He has had a down year based on what he's done in the past 2 or 3 years for the Rangers. And then also Brock Nelson has been a sniper in terms of the goal scoring for the Islanders, but is he an upper echelon player across the league? A lot of people argue not. But again, these GMs and coaches are looking for different things. You know, Tortorella is part of the coaching staff for the U.S. John Cooper for the back-to-back champion Tampa Bay Lightning a couple years ago is the head coach for Team Canada. So they're looking to build their brand. And also they're looking to kind of have a tryout low-key for the Olympics, right, coming up. And some of these guys that are on the current teams may prove, and they prove themselves, that they deserve to be on the Olympic team when that day comes. I know Mark Stone for Team Canada, who is one of the most clutch players in the league, and I would really look at him to be a finisher for Team Canada. You know, besides their elite talent, like the McKinnons and McDavid and McCarr and Sidney Crosby, like, that guy's as good as anybody. And he was even saying, like, I hope that I play well enough in this tournament so that I make Team Canada again when they choose it for the Olympics, which is an interesting thought.
So much talent in kind of an ode to one of the greats from Canada, Sidney Crosby, in this Four Nations face-off. Of course, Pete, this kind of replaces the All-Star game, the All-Star break around the National Hockey League. We don't get back underway into actual regular season NHL games for about a week and a half. Next Saturday, two Saturdays from now, Saturday, February 22nd. So it gives us a moment, Pete, to peel back from the NHL season that we have seen and look at where things stand, standings, markets, both team success, conference success, and the individuals. As we look at the current NHL award favorites, you'll see a lot of minus money on this board, but in various different ways, Pete, in terms of some of those minus money prices. Leon Draisaitl of the Oilers is the favorite right now to win the Hart Trophy, which is basically the MVP in the National Hockey League. Pete, as you look at all these numbers, all have a minus in front, but which one down the stretch run of this NHL season feels the most up for grabs?
I think that Zach Werenski, if the Columbus Blue Jackets make the playoffs, could maybe unseat Cale Makar for the Norris. He's been that good comparatively in a number of different defensemen scoring in league leaderboard categories. Also for Jack Adams, Scott Arneil, the Winnipeg Jets have maybe been the biggest story in the league this year. I know that Washington has been a bigger surprise, but sometimes these surprising teams, like you're seeing it now with the Minnesota Wild, they go on a bit of a spill. Maybe they regress a little bit. I know that Ovechkin's going to be in the midst of the great chase for Wayne Gretzky down the stretch, may even get it this year, especially if he gets it. I mean, what an incredible story that team is. Maybe Spencer Carberry will run away with this thing, but I still think there is some regression due for the Capitals. I never would have expected them to be this good. So maybe don't count out Scott Arneil for those Winnipeg Jets that started the season off on that ridiculous rampage.
Pete, let me talk to you about the Hart Trophy here, because the best player in hockey, maybe the best name in hockey, Leon Draisaitl, is a minus 115 price here. Nathan MacKinnon, Kyler Hellebuck, Connor McDavid, Kucherov. Is there a guy that you like at the top, or is there somebody that still could steal this year late in the season?
I mean, still, just stepping back and looking at Leon Draisaitl winning it, it's not no discount to him and what he's done. But he plays on the same team as Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid at any point could just unleash and go crazy and put up 2 points per game down the stretch of the season. I know that he missed a little time because of injury and then had that 3-game suspension. So that's why he's kind of fallen back a little bit. But still not a bad player to invest in terms of his ceiling the rest of the way. And then if you're looking at big picture, who's the most valuable player for the Oilers, generally speaking, it is Connor McDavid. Draisaitl is a very close second. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting. And I think that in the goal-scoring race, one other guy I wanted to mention for the Four Nations is Sam Reinhart. He is, I believe, tied 5 for 2nd behind Draisaitl, about 7 goals behind him in the regular season, give or take. But Sam Reinhart's going to be playing on power play 1 for Canada. And also when he goes back to the Panthers, he has been the best goal scorer. This past calendar year, he led the NHL in special teams goals. So power play goals plus shorthanded goals. And he's on power play 1 for Team Canada with an all-world lineup, right? MacKinnon, Makar, McDavid, and Sidney Crosby. So can you get much better than that to be the finisher on that group?
Certainly not. Pete, let's look at the Stanley Cup odds right here, right now, past the midway point of this NHL regular season. You talked about the Winnipeg Jets and the Washington Capitals, the surprises perhaps this year, at least for success. The only two teams with more than 72 points so far this season, the Caps at 80, the Jets at 81. And yet, Pete, they don't find themselves in the top 5 best prices to hoist that Stanley Cup. When do you think the odds board starts to match the standings a little bit more?
Yeah, I think Washington, even when you go into the first round of the playoffs, if they're going to play a team like the Rangers or, you know, a pesky team that makes the wild card, assuming they hold off Carolina to win the division, like they're not going to be a lock to even get out of the first round. So that's why people are a little wary about them. I wanted to highlight Dallas. Dallas has had major injuries to Tyler Seguin and now Miro Heiskanen, who's the Finnish defenseman that's out month to month now. I would expect them to make another move before the deadline. They already got Granlund from the Sharks, and I think Dallas is going to try to beef up its defense.
Pete, great stuff across the entire board. More on PEL next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
So we have the opening night of the Four Nations face-off up in Montreal between Canada and Sweden, and a huge night in the NBA ahead of All-Star Weekend on this Wednesday. All 30 NBA teams in action. That means 15 games up and down the slate. Donnie, so much to choose from. We'll try to rattle through as many as we can here in the next 7-8 minutes or so. Let's start in Dallas, where the Mavericks at home, a 6.5-point dog, hosting Jimmy Butler, Steph Curry, in the Golden State Warriors. You see that market working in favor of Golden State. We know Anthony Davis out for the next few weeks. More bad injury news for Dallas. Daniel Gafford set to miss a couple of games. The big man in the middle for the Mavericks. It has not been an easy week or so for these Mavs. Can they keep the game close tonight inside the American Airlines Arena?
Yeah, it's a big move tonight, too, because, by the way, FanDuel in New Jersey opened this at 3.5, and now you see that current pricing at -6.5, which is a big move, but that does counter Irving, Exum, Thompson, Washington. How about this? Olivier Maxence Prosper steps into that starting lineup here as the anticipated center. So he's ready to go. Power forward there. I look at this game, and I do think the Warriors win. But do I think they can win by 7-plus on the road? Possibly. But I look at that total, 232.5, now up to 233 across the board. I think we get points because anytime you don't have like a dominant defensive center, that means more three-point shots, more quick-moving, fast-break opportunities. I would lean more towards the over in this one, but I do think the Golden State Warriors handle their business with a W tonight.
53 games this year, DRS, for the Dubs. Most of them, 27 have gone over, 26 to the under. But Golden State, as of late, has been a hefty under team. Six of their last seven, nine of their last 11, 11 of their last 14 have pushed to the over. Both games with Jimmy Butler in the fold have gone over, and Golden State has covered as a road favorite. Butler has scored at least 20 in his two games as a Warrior. Yeah. His points prop 19.5. Steph Curry has scored at least 35 in the two games with Jimmy. Four consecutive games in the 30s for Steph Curry. His points prop tonight, 27.5. Let's head out to Los Angeles. The Grizzlies remain on the second leg of a road back-to-back. Last night in Phoenix, a victory over the Suns. Tonight, as an underdog, catching 5 points against the Clippers. Total 237.5. That line, Donnie, 5 points in favor of LA. It's a clear indication this is the second leg of a road back-to-back for Memphis. Yep.
Exactly, and that's the way you want to partake in this because, again, 3.5's opened up here. 4 is the prevailing line, particularly here at the FanDuel Sportsbook in New Jersey. Total, by the way, 235.5 is an opening number. Now live at 237.5 expected points here. It's such an odd thing, too, because you take a look at the Grizzlies. So many times in the past, slow down, play great defense. Not the same type of team. Much more fun and letting it fly from three-point range, which includes Norm Powell in that starting lineup tonight. You know it's automatic that your boy's going over 2.5 three-point shots made for Norm Powell. But for me, I agree with the line movement. I'm always going to back a team rested at home, waiting on a team that played out in another city the night before and had to fly in. Give me the Clippers to win this game by 5+. And also, that total, though, does look a little bit juicy. Maybe an under, but Norm Powell for me, over 2.5 three-point shots made. Cha-ching again. Let's go.
Death taxes at least three-pointers made by Norm Powell in an NBA game when Donnie Wrightside tells you to bet it, pretty much how things go. Memphis is the best cover team in the NBA, 35-18 against the spread. The Clippers as a favorite, though, 17-10 ATS, fourth best cover percentage of any team booked as a favorite this year. Memphis second highest over percentage, 63.5% of their games. Under last night against Phoenix, Donnie, but this just the third game in the last 11 for the Grizz featuring a total less than 240 points. Next up, let's head out to New York. The Knicks on the second leg of a back-to-back, but a change of venue. Sure, they're returning home, but they get to host the Atlanta Hawks. 40-point performance by 32 in white over there. That was Karl Anthony Towns last night in Indianapolis. Strong spread, DRS, in favor of the Knicks. But second leg of a back-to-back and a change of venue tells you what?
It tells me that, you know what, you might be a little bit leery. The Knicks probably get a win tonight. Yes, they do. Are you willing to lay that 8 to 8.5? It's actually currently 8 right now, which means you're expecting a double-digit victory. I would lean more towards the Atlanta Hawks, but you know the Atlanta Hawks are going to want to push the pace. And even though the Knicks did play last night, they should have a decent pace. But again, it's hard. Like, that was a big matchup for them to go into Indiana and pull out that win and win it by double digits. I thought they would. You're coming home, and I don't want to say it's a relaxation spot because anytime Trae Young gets in the Garden, that place is hyped up and energized. He loves to play there. I probably lean towards the Hawks catching the 8 points tonight in the Garden, but I do still think the New York Knicks are able to come away with a victory.
Atlanta's been a really good cover team this year, which was not the case the previous two NBA seasons. They have covered in 10 of their last 11. They have won three straight, two of those three outright as an underdog. And in all three wins for the Hawks, total has stayed under. Second leg of a back-to-back at a very lofty number for the New York Knicks. DRS, Atlanta 21-13 ATS as a dog this year. The previous two seasons, 34-47-1 against the spread as an underdog. So even if they come up short in the actual overall outcome, they have kept games more competitive. So many great games tonight. We've got across the board the T-Wolves hosting the Bucks. We've got the Rockets hosting the Suns, the Celtics hosting the Spurs, the Thunder against the Heat. The Jazz now get the Lakers in Salt Lake. Second game for Luka Doncic. When you look up and down the slate, any other game that catches your eye above all else?
Yeah, I do think the Lakers win by double digits tonight. That is a strong number. -8.5 on the road. Luka already got that. Okay, a little bit nerves out of the way. Now I'm ready to play 30-plus minutes if you need me. They already slapped Utah. Why aren't they going to slap them again? I think they will. And how about the Sixers? Yesterday favored by almost double digits against the Toronto Raptors, losing that game outright, getting booed off of their home court. Now I'm supposed to be surprised that their favorite opened up at -2. Now they're -3 in Brooklyn. Like, how can you trust the Philadelphia 76ers when I was saying yesterday, now's the time to make that stand in the second half to make the playoffs, and you lost in embarrassing fashion on your home court? I don't know how you trust the Sixers actually laying any points at this point now, Ben.
It's atrocious, Donnie. They don't have wiggle room. That is not a luxury they have this year. And they were a 9-point favorite at home last night and got beat outright by Toronto. DRS, enjoy the money line, my friend. We will chat tomorrow. We'll continue things here on the early line with some college basketball handicaps next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
15 games around the association, a full Wednesday night in the NBA, all 30 clubs in action. Just one more day, I believe, even tomorrow, of NBA games before the All-Star break. So a big night of basketball in the association, but of course, another big night of college basketball on this Wednesday. Maybe not as star-studded and prolific and chock-full of marquee matchups as we saw last night on a Tuesday evening in men's college hoops, but still a great Wednesday night. Can Duke bounce back? A loss on the road at Clemson over the weekend. The first ACC loss for John Shire's Blue Devils all year long. The odds makers expecting that bounce back for the Dukies in a big way. Duke taking on a Cal team that has not been great in their opening year of ACC action. 23.5 in favor of Duke tonight. Still number 3 in the country. And outside of the loss to Clemson, they've been playing great basketball. 10 of their 12 wins in ACC play by double digits. Here's a really interesting spot for St. John's, ranked number 9 in the AP Top 25 this week. By the way, the highest ranking for the Red Storm since the final AP poll of the 1999-2000 college basketball season. That year, the last year, St. John's won an NCAA tournament game. So you think St. John's, winners of 10 in a row, and a huge victory on the road outright against UConn and Storrs on Friday would be riding high. Now, they are still a road favorite against Villanova tonight in Philly. But a 3.5-point number you see there is now just 2.5 in favor of the Johnnies. Is this the trappity of trap spots and a letdown, come-down spot for Rick Pitino and the Red Storm? I think higher of Rick Pitino being ready to get his guy prepared for this game. They've had a longer layoff, played on Friday, now getting ready to stay on the road on this Wednesday. Not a far trip by any means to head to Philadelphia to take on Nova. Villanova's playing okay basketball, around 500 right now in the Big East. An underdog 5 times in Big East games this year for Kyle Neptune and his Cats. They're just 1-4, both straight up and against the spread. The only victory, the only cover outright against Butler. That line, though, should scare you off. St. John's has won 10 straight. They have covered in 7 of those 10 wins, 5 of their prior 6 games. They have gone under in 5 of 6. The defensive intensity on that side of the floor for the Red Storm at an all-time high, it would seem, under Rick Pitino. But again, very weird numbers tonight. I can't bet it here in New York. I might lean with back in St. John's, thinking the market might be slightly overcorrecting and anticipating a great Villanova effort. But again, that should tell you all you need to know. Nova almost expected to pull off the outright upset and end the 10-game win streak for the Johnnies tonight. Texas Tech back at home, 15.5-point favorite against Arizona State. South Carolina and Ole Miss, the Gamecocks in Columbia, 4.5-point dog. The Running Rebs feeling pretty good about where they stand right now, although they did blow a big lead over the weekend. Missouri, 8.5-point favorite at home against Oklahoma. Arkansas playing a little better ball right now in the SEC. 9.5-point favorite at home in Bud Walton against LSU. Of course, Arkansas using the victory at Rupp Arena to play some of their best basketball all season long, which has been the case for a team that is only 3-7 in SEC play. By the way, the team they play tonight, LSU, 1-9 in SEC action, and the Tigers still looking, I believe, for that first quad one win. South Carolina, a tournament team a year ago under Lamont Paris, now 10-13 straight up, winless, 0-10 within the SEC. Can they find that victory at home tonight in Columbia against the running Rebs? Now, as we look at Arkansas, just quickly here, right? Beat Kentucky, beat Texas, returned to Bud Walton and lost to Alabama at home, but by only 4 over the weekend on Saturday. High scoring game, 85-81. Elsewhere around the country, Rutgers playing much better basketball. 6.5-point favorite at home tonight in the rack against an Iowa team that is mightily struggling at this moment. Again, the Scarlet Knights playing their best ball. The return of both healthy freshmen in Dylan Harper, and Ace Bailey. A positive sign for Steve Peichel and the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. Hoping to get back into tournament consideration, if at all possible, as a preseason top 25 team. That does it for a Wednesday on the Early Line. We return tomorrow, Thursday, 8 a.m. Eastern, right here on the Grid.